Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know if you had a chance to watch this yet, but I'm going to ask you now, BT. Have you seen the Saquon Barkley documentary?
I haven't, and I really want to.
Okay, I was going to say, so you do have interest in seeing
100%, yeah.
Now, the one thing I would say, I did watch it. I actually watched it with my wife, you know, because naturally what happens is we go to watch a show, like always, and I'm like, ah, come on, like, I really don't want to watch that. But then we end up watching it, and she falls asleep 5 minutes in, and then I'm watching whatever I want anyway. So then I went to the Saquon Barkley doc, and she woke up, like, halfway in it and then started to watch it as well. So it was actually fun for us to watch it. But you and I, and everybody, you know, that pays attention to the sports stuff, like, we know exactly what's going on and how it's going to play out. You know, somebody like my wife is like, oh, what happened? Was it good with the Eagles? How far did they go? Did they go to the Super Bowl? So it's fun to watch along.
I don't know. You got to find out, honey. The game's next week.
As I was saying, watch out. You can watch the rest of it in the documentary. That was kind of the hook. So knowing what was coming, I guess it was a little less exciting. But I do think it was still, it takes you behind the scenes as to the person, what he was really thinking, and the emotions that he was feeling. And I do think that, like, I have a better understanding for him, and I do think that he was getting screwed over and just felt disrespected, if not by the Giants, which was certainly a part of it, by the way the NFL was working, and he felt frustrated, like he was out of control, whereas he's the best back in the league, but they don't want to pay him like that, but they say that they want to keep him, but they can't let him test free agency, so then they franchise tag. I'm like, he had no control of his own situation, and it was immensely frustrating, and I can understand him wanting to be shown a little bit more respect and appreciation, and what a gratifying end to that whole story, going his first year with Philadelphia and winning the Super Bowl.
He really has been a victim of bad timing up until now. Like, think about when he went second overall, and that was obviously overdrafting him. But the running back position has been altered in terms. Now, it's coming back a little bit more favorably than it was.
It was starting the last couple of years or so, right? Or
no
was
question.
It last year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, but there was at least a 10-year run where there was a diminishment in terms of salaries and at least perceived importance. So that was one aspect. And the other thing was the Giants teams that he was on were terrible. So I don't know. I think he's one of the great people that we've had a chance to watch. I think he's got just a great charisma, a great heart. I think he's very grounded. I think he was amazing to watch. Yeah, listen, he also had some injuries, obviously. But did you get the sense that he wanted? I know that you said you felt like he was disrespected, but some things that I've heard from people was that they got the sense that he wanted to lead the Giants and Philly was always on his radar. Is that apparent in this thing or no?
Yes, but not because he was just like, oh, screw the Giants. It was because he never felt the true appreciation. Like he said, and I do believe him, it wasn't even about the most money. Like it got to a point where, yeah, he's going to want more money, but he just wanted them to treat him fairly.
Yep.
And they kept saying, we love you, we value you. Maris said flat out, I'm not going to trade you. You're too valuable to the organization. He said, well, then fine, pay me. And instead they go out there and extend Daniel Jones and give him what he wants and then slap the franchise tag on Saquon Barkley, which is just not right. So I know that that's the way of the league, but I think a little more appreciation. He also felt like they were running him in the ground. You know, all the carry, you're using me for all this, but yet you're not going to pay me. I think a little more appreciation, less about the money and more about the appreciation, would have gone a longer way in keeping Saquon Barkley happy. And it got to a point where he was fed up and couldn't wait to have other opportunities. And the Eagles came with a great opportunity. The Giants didn't want to match. And it was a great situation for him to go there and have success, and he did. So,
And then think about some of the things that have happened with the Giants here since he left. So you go back in March, early this year. I mean, Slayton signs a 3-year deal worth, $35, $36 million? Now, not all of it's guaranteed. I think it's like $22 million guaranteed. But I mean, Darius Slayton's not good. And no, Saquon Barkley, he's right. One of the superstars of the NFL when he's healthy. He's a transcendent player, and he basically had to beg for money. So
I think Shane didn't, and I'm with, like, to an extent, I'm with you. I would not pay running backs. However, he was more than just a running back. And the owner clearly loved him, and they were playing the game of the salary cap where the running back position was valued.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran that risk, and they let him go, and he was happy as anything. Now, I will say that this year has not been great for Saquon or the Eagles. It's not a knock on him. It's just the offensive line hasn't been good enough. Their offense is not good enough. Last year was almost a perfect storm of, you know, he was there, motivated, extra hungry. They had a good offensive line, better offense, dominated the league, dominated the postseason, won the Super Bowl. This year, it's been the opposite of that, but Saquon got what he wanted, a new opportunity, and had great success, and obviously got his payday as well.
Real fast on this. Think about, and we reference it with baseball quite a bit, the heartbeat of the game when we talk about analytics, right? Don't you think this is a pretty good example of how, and this is, you know, not to just, you know, throw some shade towards Joe Shane here, but Joe's a first-time, youngish general manager who's much more married to, you know, hardcore numbers and already established what positions have X amount of worth. If there was a general manager who, not that it's always about age, but had been on the job longer, don't you think he would have just handled this differently?
I don't know, because a part of me says that he handled it in the right way, even with the result being what it was. The Giants were not in a spot where they could be giving big-time money. Now, he also paid Daniel Jones, which was a mistake. You could reference Slayton.
And Slayton.
Other mistakes there. So, but I can't fundamentally go against what I believe, and that is not to pay a running back big-time money. So Joe Shane had it's a very difficult decision. I actually give him more credit for making a difficult decision, knowing how much the owner valued him,
mm-hmm.
knowing how much Saquon meant. You could hear Joe Shane basically saying, like, Saquon, I don't think your value is as good as what you think it may be. Like, because Saquon will say, well, then why not just trade me? Just trade me. And he's like, yeah, but, like, I don't think we're getting anything back if we were to trade you. And I think Joe Shane was right in that regard. Now, I love Saquon. I love him the person. I love him as the running back. But I also think that Joe Shane made the right move for the Giants.
He might have, especially when you have somebody like Scadaboo. Not that he's ever going to be Saquon, but at least this new wave of energy around the Giants would support what you just said. But what was the difference in what Saquon was asking and what the 10, what was it, 10-1?
Yeah, not much.
So that's what I mean. Yeah. If Saquon came and was like, I want $16 million a year, and Joe's like, you're worth 9.5 or 10. Well, it's untenable. There's nothing to talk about. You got to go. But we're gonna quibble over $1 million?
Yeah, and
then give 22 guaranteed to Slayton?
And to Saquon's point, and he said this, it wasn't even about the $1 million.
That's respect.
Yes.
No, I get it.
Which he's earned.
I get it.
Like, that's the thing that bothered me from the Joe Shane point of view. Like, it's not about the money, but show the guy some freaking appreciation and some love. Like, that whole thing. Remember, we were dealing with this in real time, and we actually might have even been on the air during it. I forget what happened, but in real time on the franchise tag deadline day,
yep.
They came to an agreement with Daniel Jones minutes before the franchise tag. Saquon, you could see him sitting there waiting by his phone all day, and then with 3 minutes to go, whatever it was, he gets a text from Daniel Jones saying, I just signed. And then he's like, well, now I know I'm not going to get signed, and he got slapped with the franchise tag. So even that, the way that was handled was just putting Saquon on the back burner and prioritizing other things. So those things damaged the relationship more than whatever financial offer, whether it's $1 million or two million more.
Yeah.
It was the other stuff.
Yeah, well, but that's why he's a high character person.
Right.
I mean, he stood by his convictions and he was ultimately proven
correct.
Right, which you got to respect here, especially when you go and do what he did a year ago, win the Super Bowl, and now you're all over every commercial. All right, so the initial offer was 3 years, approximately $12.5 million per season. And as we recall, that was rejected during the bye week. That came out shortly thereafter. Then there was a slight increase with the second offer, which went from 12.5 up to 13, which could have reached 14 with incentives. Now, this was rejected because there was a lower amount of guarantee to what Barkley was looking for. Then there was the third offer, which went up to, which stayed at 13, 26 over the first two, and was extended before the first franchise tag deadline, which Barkley obviously turned down. And he was looking to get the neighborhood of Christian McCaffrey, who I think was right around 15 change, whatever it was. I mean,
he kept saying, I'm the best back in the league. I believe you got to pay me like that.
Yeah.
Like, he kept it. But I do think it was more about the respect and less about the money of the whole thing. And how about the fact that they would let it go right down to the wire, but pay Daniel Jones
I know.
And not Barkley, who was a bigger reason the first of all, as big a reason, if not a bigger reason, than Daniel Jones was for the prior success that they had.
You think Saquon got tired of losing too? I mean, come on,
I think
man.
All of it. I think he got tired of being run into the ground, tired of losing. I think all those things. He also was going to hold out and then said he talked to his former college coach, James Franklin.
Yeah, who just got fired.
And basically said, the Saquon that I know would go out there, play his ass off, and let that do the talk. Something along those lines, which led Saquon to make the decision to go out there and play. Remember, we were debating this in real
time. For sure. This is when I knew the kid was special. Obviously, you watch him play at Penn State, you're like, wow. I mean, he's different. It's a different electricity. When he's got the ball. And we had him on the old show nationally, Tiki and I, and he was actually sitting in a stairwell. I'll never forget this, on the campus of Penn State. And our old producer passed him through, and like it was a little echoey. And so we're like, hey, where are you? In your dorm room? He's like, no, I'm actually sitting in the stairwell. I've got chemistry or advanced whatever he had coming up. And he still, you know, fulfilled the commitment of calling us up. And we did about a 12 or 13 minute chat with him at some stairwell in some building on Penn State's campus.
There That's Saquon for you. Just reminded me, there is a clip of you and TK, I think it was during the pandemic, where it wasn't with him, but you guys were talking about him.
Okay.
And you were like, what's he doing? He's dancing so much. He's dancing
so much. Oh, was I saying that?
Something like that. Yeah, taking a shot. It
would be T. Instead Sal. Of going to the hole? Yeah. Hey, I'm an old coach. Yeah, right.
PT and Sal, the fan, 888-808-1009, the number to call. Back to the Jet stuff. Aaron is calling from East Meadow. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I think this is my first time calling this show. I really appreciated you guys putting me on. Thank you.
You got it, bud. Thanks for making it. Thank you.
Yes. No problem. I mean, it's not with good news to talk about this, because I think I've talked about this so much to my family, to my friends, that they might as well call me like a psych ward patient. What is the definition of insanity, guys?
Yeah, we know. We've heard it a million times. Keep doing the same thing over and over, expect a different result. Yep.
But this is the thing, and, you know, I like conspiracy theories. You guys like conspiracy theories? Do you go on the internet and look them up?
Yeah. I'm not a big into that myself. I don't.
It's a waste of time. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, do you got one for us?
Well, yeah, I do. I really, really do. Because okay. I've been watching this team since about 1998, and I have seen not necessarily the same story play out all the time, but pretty similar. And if I look at the history of this team, as I go back from 1998 and then back forward from 1998, I see the same things.
Such as?
Same promises, same bill of goods.
But how is that a conspiracy? How is that a conspiracy? I'm lost. How is that a conspiracy? It's just stupidity is what it is.
Oh, okay. What is the conspiracy?
Fair enough. So I'm going to use a specific train, you know, a time here. After we lost Parcells, and after those coaching switches happened,
yeah,
I think New England, going on the run that they did, caused this guy to maybe want to meddle more than he should. And I think that we're seeing it in every single generation of coach that comes in here, that they start out boisterous, start out new bill of goods, new everything, and slowly, 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 it creeps back to this. But now it's worse, because there was success in the middle of that that had nothing to do with that coaching switch. But why would you meddle and get rid of guys who gave you consistent success? The only consistent success that I've seen in my
life.
But
like, who are you talking about? Herm? What area are we talking about? Just to
Herm.
Be clear.
Rex. Yeah. Oh. Rex.
Mangini.
Herm.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Rex.
Here's the thing, though, Aaron, and thank you for the call. Mangini built the team that Rex took over and had some success with. Jeff fans like to hang on the fact that it was Rex because they liked his personality. I ain't kissing anybody's rings. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then they get to back-to-back AFC championship games. Instead of looking at the how, they look at the result, which is a flawed process. It's not always about the result. How that happened was that Eric Mangini built that team, him and Tannenbaum, built that team into what it became under Rex Ryan. And had they stuck through the storm with Mangini, I firmly believe. Now, again, not that Mangini was perfect. Also, first time head coaching, learning curves and all this stuff. But had they stuck through that storm with Mangini, I believe they would have been rewarded in having who I believe to be a very good football coach. Personality? No. Thought he was Belichick, whatever. But as far as being a football coach, and knowing what it takes to build a football team,
mm-hmm.
Mangini's the one guy who's done it here in the last 20 years or whatever it's been.
Who were you and I talking to where they said the same thing? Was it a guest? Was it off the air? Was it away from the station? Somebody said the same.
No, we did have the conversation on the air. Now, you know I've always felt that way about Mangini.
Yes, you have said that.
Somebody
now,
did.
Now, he also stumbled in other places.
Could it have been Becht?
No, it wasn't Becht. Wasn't it an in-studio guest?
Richardson? Was it Tony
Richardson? Yes, it was Tony Richardson.
Okay, I know we had him in not too long ago.
I think we talked about that more off the air, but here's the one difference. And,
oh, right. Maybe
right? Remember
did.
That?
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference is if you go back, right, just to play the game of going back, Bill Parcells obviously was phenomenal. Then Al Groh comes in for 1 year. They start out 4-0 or 5-0, but they peter out, but they still finish
9-7. And that was the right transition.
7.
Parcells to Groh, like you really had no choice.
Well, it's supposed to be Parcells to Belichick. We know what happened. Right. Al Groh was the trusted lieutenant, stay in the building, boom, and then he bounced. He went to college, Al Groh, remember,
Virginia,
after a year. Yeah, but he had at least a stabilizing 9-7 season. Then Herm came in. And listen, Herm wasn't perfect, but there was a lot of good, meaningful football that we got to watch under Herm. And then Mangini was basically a 500 coach. And again, there was some evidence that, okay, we got the right guy. And then obviously Rex Ryan did two really good things. The difference that, like, think about the stability. Parcells amazing, Groh solid, Edwards solid, Mangini solid, Rex really amazing early, then he petered out. Think about what these coaches are trying to undo now. Now let's go backwards from Aaron Glenn. Ulbrich, awful. Sala, awful. Gase, awful. Bowles here, awful. Not with Tampa. So it is a Herculean task.
Right.
To change the entire mindset, the roster, and just to get this functioning on the most basic level that I don't know why anybody, and I'm guilty of this, why we ever expect one of these first-year guys to come in here and clean up this mess.
Right. It's become even more daunting of a task than it was before. I think it's a great point. Now, the one good thing would be this, and again, not that there's much good in 0-6. What if it were the other way? Whether it were Brian Daboll, who had success his first year, and they mm-hmm. got to a point where everybody was saying he should be fired. Whether it were Eric Mangini, who was 10-6 his first year,
mm-hmm.
and eventually fell off.
And would have won more if Brett Favre didn't get hurt.
Correct.
That was a good team.
So it's not necessarily how you start does not indicate how it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a path here where this is as bad as it gets. I don't know that to be the case. I'm just saying that we could be seeing the lumps here early on. First year, okay, whatever they finish with, 3 wins, whatever it may be. After that, maybe you start to see it build the right way moving forward, as opposed to the first year aberration of success. Wow, you won 10 games.
Uh-huh.
Here we go. You know, throw Todd Bowles in there, whatever you want. There have been coaches who've had the first year success with prior regimes' teams and couldn't build it in a sustainable fashion, whereas maybe this is the time where it doesn't look good at all right now, but if you give them the proper time, Mugi and Glenn can build a sustainable model.
I feel you. I mean, listen, take Mendoza here. Mendoza, what did he win? 87 games in year one? I think it was 87, 88, whatever it was. Maybe even 89. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
High 80s. And obviously, the Mets almost got to the World Series. Now, let's say if year one was this year rather than flipped. And let's say that he won in year one, whether it was 83, which the Mets did, or even less than that. So year one, let's just say it was 79 wins. And then this year, it was 83 or 84. Well, now, I don't know if you're necessarily judging Mendoza differently, but you might be because you're like, okay, slow incremental progress. We got some young pitchers. We got Soto. We got some money. Let's build this thing out. Whereas you were almost in the World Series to not in the playoffs. Now there's a different spotlight on Mendoza to year three.
Right, and that doesn't mean
because of early success.
It doesn't mean that that's the right way. And that's the point. Maybe the best thing here could be bleeding out for
keep
the Jets.
Keep losing, Aaron.
And letting them, well, no, obviously, you know what I'm saying. Like, have them rebuild this thing. It takes time.
I know.
Nobody wants to hear it. It does, especially for a general manager and for a first-year head coach. If Aaron Glenn doesn't take significant strides in year two on a week-to-week basis, forget about the results, we'll know. If he's doing the same crap that he did yesterday or the stuff that he's done before, like in year two, then we've got a major problem on our hands. Let's just ride this out.
We're
and be
going
a little
to. We're, no, we're going to, and we're going to be fair to Aaron, and we're going to be fair to the situation, which has been absolutely unfathomably bad for all these years. But the thing that really I keep going back to, and again, I'm going to give him some runway to get this thing going here. I do believe in him still, maybe not as much as I did when he was hired, but I definitely still believe in him. When you talk that tough and then you don't even try to go for points, that's a contradiction that I have a rough time understanding and accepting. That's the thing that bothers me most.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Eddie in Vernon, New Jersey, calling with something that we talked about earlier. This is a pertinent topic. What's on your mind today, Eddie?
What's happening, guys? I'm glad that you got me back on, but I got a very important message for everybody to get us out of the funeral of the Jets Monday.
Yes, go ahead.
So anyway, three callers ago, we had a guy call in talking about anchovies in the sauce.
Yes.
Not anchovies in the gravy.
Right, he said
anchovies
sauce.
In the sauce.
Correct. That's why. I took no issue with that because he properly called it sauce.
And BT didn't push back at all. I know, Sal, you got my back on this. But
what do you mean push back? Push back on what?
Gravy versus sauce.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, listen, if there's meat, to me, it's gravy. But it's, you know, that's what I say.
Like the brajol. You're saying?
Yeah.
No, I had brajol too growing up.
It cracks me up.
Brajol growing up was a staple.
Love the brajol.
The brajol. I'm childish, are we?
Well, what's an anchovy, by the way? Is that
it's
meat?
Fish.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not, but
no,
that's not
no,
meat?
It's not meat? No
fish.
Way.
That's fish. What I was going to say. Like
canned fish.
Yeah. I've never had anchovy. I definitely have had brajol. You get the string in it when you go.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah, I know that people joke around.
Do you eat the string?
No, you don't eat it. You pull the string out. By the way, my mother did text on this earlier. She said fresh basil, I guess, is the key for the...
That's hers.
I guess, okay. Yeah. I never knew. Okay, thanks, Mom.
You're supposed to read that on air, by the way. That's our secret.
Yeah.
Like, you're not allowed to give these tips on air.
I mean, I'm sure others use fresh basil.
Yeah, I can't believe there's one person in the world who puts a little basil in the sauce for the gravy.
Yeah, groundbreaking there for the Wakanda recipe.
I do a little sugar. I do a little red wine.
Sugar?
Yeah.
Not salt.
I do.
Let me ask you a question. The red wine goes in the sauce, or you just drink the red wine?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Did the red wine go in the sauce, or you just drink the red wine?
No, I put a little bit in the sauce there. And then I drink it while I'm eating the... So I have both, in the plate and in the cup.
So you do... It's like drinking, not like red wine vinegar or anything. You're talking about red wine.
Real
actual
red wine. Like
wine.
A cab or
you
like
put that,
that
in there.
Yeah, yeah,
put you a little bit of that. You make the sauce, not your wife?
Yeah, I don't make it too often, though.
And does Jen make her own sauce or no?
This is Texas sauce, which, you know, I'll handle the sauce.
I know.
She does the other stuff. She's actually a pretty good cook, but there's certain things, I mean, just, you know. She's learned how to do Christmas Eve, right. Like she's learned, but there's certain things I got
to
do.
I get it, because I did the same thing. I told my wife, she's like, oh, I used to make lasagna. I'm like, look, no offense, but, you know, you're not Italian.
Yep.
And whatever you think lasagna is, probably isn't what I think lasagna is.
But so, when was the last time you cooked it? Has it been a while?
I told her, don't even waste your time with sauce.
I'm saying, what about you? Like, have you?
I don't make sauce.
You don't make anything?
No, my mother and sister make it. My grandmothers used to make it before they passed away. And my mother and my sister make it.
I got it.
And even my sister, I'm not so sure. My mother, I don't even, like, it's always my mother usually.
I find it oddly therapeutic. Now, again, I don't do it too. I'll start to do it a little bit more, like, after the middle of November. Because then football's over and soccer's over. Sundays will be a little bit more in the house. One thing that I do is, too, not so much with the brajol, but with the sausage, right? What I will do is I will, and I don't know if this, like, this is kind of a shortcut because I don't have 5 hours to do this, but I'll take the sausage, Premio, which I love Premio sausage, right? And I'll slice one down the middle with a real knife and just a little bit, and then I'll just kind of skewer them in some oil, like maybe
before
2 or 3. Before.
Okay.
And I've got the gravy, well, I've got the sauce, and then eventually it becomes the gravy, but I've got the gravy going, and I've got the sugar, I've got obviously the red wine, but then what I do is after I kind of char the sausage, I will then put them in there and let them cook for like 2 hours. But I'll also take some of the oil from what I just fried up.
Dump it in
and
there.
And I'll put it in the sauce and it's a little more authentic.
Now, why don't you do this more often? You sound like you know what you're doing.
I do. I definitely know what I'm doing. I don't have the time. You know, there's games. I mean.
You can wake up a little earlier and get the sauce marinating.
Early.
You don't have time.
Yeah, but at times we just can't. What are we doing today, hon? Are we ordering sushi? Are we doing Jersey Mike's? I mean, we're walking to the door sometimes. It's 8:30 at night. The kids are 9 to 10 years old. Homework's half done. Showers have to happen. Brush the teeth. Read the book. Do this. Oh, my God.
You'll like this one.
Yes.
My wife yesterday, we went to the supermarket Saturday. We had Saturday was a long day. We went to pumpkin picking, whatever.
Oh, you did that Saturday?
Yeah, we did do that Saturday, which was fun.
Which farm? Do you remember which one?
Tranquility, maybe?
We haven't been there. Okay, those are fun when they're young. I enjoyed doing that.
My daughter loved it. She loved it, and that's the thing. And then from there, my wife wanted to go to Blue Steel Restaurant. Have you ever been?
I have not. I've never even heard of it. Blue Steel, huh?
Freehold. I don't know. Whatever it is. I forget the exact town, but Blue Steel Restaurant, they have excellent burgers and pizza there, okay?
Uh-huh.
So we make a plan to go. I'm like, you sure you want to go today? It's like an hour or the other direction, whatever. We get there.
Yep.
Street fair. I'm like, Jesus.
Oh, I can't stand street fairs.
Now it's a pain in the neck, parking, street fair, all right, whatever. We walk through. We're starving. Got to go to the bathroom, whatever. It's closed. On a Saturday afternoon, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Why would you call? What restaurant's not open on it? What time is this?
I know, but
3 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
4 or 5?
Yeah.
Wait, so it was opening later or just closed for the day?
It was closed, period.
What kind of restaurant doesn't open on a Saturday?
I guess.
Do they want to make a profit?
I guess because of the stupid fare, whatever it may be. So now we have to drive back the other way. We ended up going to another restaurant. But anyway,
have been pleasant to ride with the rest of the way.
Yeah, because Saturday it says 12 to 11 they're open.
Yeah, exactly. It should be open. It was the street fair. And it's a good place. It was very good. We haven't been there in a while, so she wanted to go. She knows I like it. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So we go to another place, fine. And then we have to, it's a long, exhausting day, so now it's another hour before we eat. We go to the supermarket to get food for, not only yesterday or whatever, but get set for the week, specifically Sunday. And she said she's going to make chicken salad for Sunday, so I could watch the games, have a little chicken salad, no big deal, on rye, whatever.
Better than what the Virginia and the Jets are, usually chicken the other thing.
Yeah, point is, not this elaborate sauce or any kind of big thing, chicken salad. That was the plan yesterday.
Pretty basic stuff.
She wakes up yesterday, has a little bit of a headache, her back, pulled it back, couldn't make the chicken salad.
Oh, gosh.
We had to call in and order pizza yesterday.
Oh, man. She went on the DL, huh? On a Sunday.
Chicken salad. Now, she gave me the option, said, if you want to make it.
Nah, I'm not making anything. I'm watching football.
That's exactly what I said.
Yep.
Let's just order the damn pizza and call it a day.
Would you get just pizza?
Yeah.
Nothing else, like a hero, nothing
else? A little
chicken
parm hero wasn't very good. We tried a new spot, whatever.
That wasn't good?
I mean, put it this way. Not that I want to go back living at home, because that's obviously going backwards.
Yep.
Nothing beats waking up on a Sunday morning.
I know.
Smelling my mom's sauce.
I know.
Or the fried meatballs.
I know.
Or the ravioli.
I know,
or the
brazole. I know. And I'd come home from, as I got older, when I was out or just coming home from a game, and she'd always, set aside two meatballs and a piece of bread, and she'd let me dip it in, and I'd go down and watch the Jets and the Giants. Mom always hooked it up.
I didn't have to get up to go get it. It came to me.
Yep.
I didn't have to clean up. Scott is calling from Haverstraw, New York. What's up, Scott?
Boys, how are you today?
Scott. Good. How are you?
Good. I'm a Jet fan back from when I was a kid in '69, been through the ringer like all the other fans out there, and that includes that pitiful and atrocious display of offensive and coaching ineptitude yesterday.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad. Okay. But I am curious about something, and I'm looking for your opinion on this. I bought into the whole culture change, thing here, and, and I want to be behind Aaron Glenn, like you, BT, and I was thinking, through these losses, this is why we're all talking about what are the changes, and hopefully they're thinking about what are the changes to happen here. But if that game, if they had not made just one of those mistakes, and the Jets had won, with the way that they were playing that game, and with the way that Denver was playing that game, what do you think would be happening in that press room after that game? If they won that game, what kind of strutting, what kind of justification for that play would be put out there by the coach?
But I don't.
That's what we're saying. Because I want progress.
Here. Okay. Let me just make sure I understand. We understand what you're saying here. So basically, because the Jets, if the Jets would have won a really ugly game, he would have been able to bypass some of the critiques and maybe. It would not be an accurate reading as to how they actually played. I guess that's what you're saying, right?
I that's exactly right, because you look, Aaron Glenn is a stubborn guy, right? We see that a little bit of, and so to hold on, if he won that game with the way that the team played, There would I can hear it. You know, he would be sick, and that's our plan. This is part of what our process. It's going to be ugly games, but you know, we're going to keep pushing through this when we all know that, as an example with Justin Fields, that he is not the answer.
I think they know that too, though. I think they know that too at this point, Scott. And thank you for the call. It's why, to me, BT, I wouldn't be going based off of the results. It was an ugly game regardless, but had they made a different decision, let's say, to kick a field goal in the end that won them the game, at least that would have been one less thing we could have been critical of Aaron Glenn for. I would hope he would have stood up and said, look, it's great to get a win. We desperately need a win. No apologizing. Wins are hard in this league. But
yeah, exactly. We have a lot to clean up. Yeah. And I think he probably would have struck a really good balance there. I do. I think that, you know, when you're backpedaling, as he is, with no wins, you know, I don't want to say that you say things that you don't mean, but maybe you overthink things and misrepresent whatever was really truly happening or the process that the decision that you made in real time. I think he's a smart guy, and I think that he's a real person, which is nice, because I didn't feel like too often Robert Saleh, who's also a nice guy, he just didn't seem like he was a real person. Like, I felt like I was listening to, I don't know, to somebody who just wasn't real. And I don't feel like that with Aaron Glenn. I think Aaron's going to be open to learning from mistakes, and I think it would have been humble in victory. And by the way, we'll find out, because I think there's a good chance that they win the game. Eventually, he's going to win a game. And if he shoves it down our throat, well, then he didn't learn anything. But I don't think that's what we'll get.
And that's the biggest reason why I believe in Aaron Glenn, is because I believe in his mindset. I believe in him being open and honest. What I don't like to see, and we've seen this at times throughout the course of the first 6 weeks, he's getting away from who he really is, starting to let some of the noise get to him. He's still young. He's still learning as a head coach. He's got to get through that. And once he does, then I think he'll be unstoppable as a head coach. Yeah, you also got to make the right decisions on the field. It's a work in progress, learning as we go. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's Call of the Day is brought to you by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts. James is calling from Delray Beach. What's up, James?
What's going on, guys? I'm not going to touch on any of the coaching decisions from yesterday, because if I do, I may have a stroke on air. But we always say, like, we got to give him time. He's a first-time head coach, and then Muji's a first-time GM. Give him time. But we said that countless times with other regimes, and you're looking down the barrel of possibly having the number one overall pick. And if you screw that one up, then it'll make the Zach Wilson number two overall pick look like nothing. Like, that will literally send this franchise back decades. They may have to leave New York if they screw that one up. So, like, you really have to sit there for once in Woody Johnson's life. He has to sit there and actually make a good decision, take his time and say, do I really want these two guys who are learning on the job, and it's only getting worse and worse by each week, and the product that we see on the field is directly from them?
Yeah.
There's turnover from past regimes, and there's guys that you're handcuffed to for this year, maybe next year, but everything we're seeing is a direct result from them, and it's only getting worse.
All right, there you have it. Call of the Day. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. We've talked some different stuff, but mostly Jets, of course, coming off of that awful performance yesterday in London. Jets will be back home, take on the Panthers in what should be a very winnable game here. I don't know, though, how people could have much confidence, BT. I know we talked about it, and I still think it's a winnable game. We could get into that as the week goes on, how we feel if they're actually going to win it or not. But at this point, I think the expectation is that the Jets are going to lose the majority of the games, if not every game, here on out.
I think they're going to go on a little run. I really do. Nothing crazy. If they don't win Carolina, if they don't beat Carolina, like, there's a chance to win two of the next three. Now, will that happen? I don't know.
You've regenerated. I like it.
Yeah, I always do.
Yeah, here we are. Unkillable.
I know. Four hours later, I come back around.
It didn't even take 4 days. It took 4 hours.
Who am I fooling? You know, I always say, I'm done. I can't. Then, but that's the essence of unkillable. No, if they were playing a good team this weekend, I'd be like, they have no chance. They're going to get stopped. This is the reality of Carolina not being incredibly good. You know, I don't know. I am a little bit worried about Garrett Wilson's knee. Did you see that he's going for testing here today? I mean, that obviously would be a major issue.
What's the difference
issue.
If he's out? They don't throw the football anyway, so he's going
to,
you know.
I mean, but at least if he's out, they don't throw it to him enough. At least if he's – actually, they don't throw it at all. I mean, Justin Fields held on to it all day. But at least if he's out there, you know, you've got to generally send that second defender his way, which theoretically makes it a little bit easier to run or for Mason Taylor or Josh Reynolds to be a little bit more open. I don't know. I would, and the Jets are favored in the game, right? 1.5-point favorites.
And Carolina coming off beating Dallas, obviously a team who dismantled the Jets. Here's the thing. If you could stop the run, Rico Dowdle has been running amok in the NFL the last couple weeks here with Carolina. And the Jets played much better defense yesterday. It's not that Denver can't score. Denver is good offensively. They're not great, but they're good offensively. Jets played good defense. They didn't have any penalties. So those are things that are getting overlooked because of the loss, because of how awful Justin Fields was, because of the ineptitude closing out the first half and obviously the decision at the end of the game. It's getting overlooked that they cleaned up the penalties for the most part, played better defense. Those are things that they're going to have to do. Like, they're not good enough, period. But they're certainly not good enough to beat themselves at the stupid things, even against a team like Carolina. If they play the defense that they played yesterday and play the disciplined football, meaning no penalties that they played like yesterday against Carolina, I do believe their offense will be better running the football with the quarterback, with the running backs, whatever. Their offense will be better than what it was against Denver.
Yeah, and we've seen snippets of it so far this year, so it's not irresponsible to say that it's going to be a bit better. But think about like a good franchise versus the Jets, right? And you and I were talking a little bit about the Tennessee Titans and their head coach. I mean, this guy's on borrowed time, if you ever heard of him. He's going to be fired soon. Cam Ward doesn't look that good. And that's a bad franchise. They've become a bad franchise, really, since Vrabel, toward the end of Vrabel till now. But then look at the Patriots, right? An all-time dynasty, an all-time iconic team. Then they fall on hard terms. Like, you know, their star gets older. And what happens? Immediately, they've got their coach and they've got their quarterback. Rabel's going to be there for a long time, and Drake May's going to be a stud. That's what the real franchises do.
Anthony's in Fleetwood. What's up, Ant?
Hey, Ant.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thank you so much for having me. The one thing about Glenn that honestly I can't stand, I feel like he has like this like fearful look on his face at all times when I look at the other top head coaches and you see them looking at the clipboards and they're like dialing up the plays and kind of planning ahead. But my question for you guys is, what amount of wins do you think Aaron Glenn would need to keep his job? And what would be your level of confidence that Aaron Glenn could develop a rookie quarterback and hopefully win a Super Bowl for the Jets?
I don't think it should be about a win total. And thank you for the call. We appreciate you checking in. And I need to see how Aaron Glenn coaches and learns along the way here in the first year before I say that I'm confident he could develop a young quarterback. He's not an offensive guy, but can he build an infrastructure, build the foundation that you can pick whatever quarterback Muji and Glenn decide to pick and bring him in to have success, set him up for success. Not about, oh, well, let's go get a quarterback and hope he's going to be the savior, because that will fail. That has failed before many times over. I want to see an established head coach with Aaron Glenn, a guy who knows what he's doing to build the foundation. I believe he has it in him.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously haven't seen that yet. I don't want to see him lose his confidence after six losses in a row. That's what worries me here. The storm, the noise, losing his confidence. But I still believe he's got it in him to build the proper infrastructure to set up whoever quarterback may be in next, whenever that is, to succeed.
I do too. I don't have like incredible, unwavering belief that that's going to happen, but certainly not going to abandon the post yet. And I believe more than I don't. But listen, here's the bottom line. Like, no franchise should need a 22-year-old kid to come in and elevate them. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's incumbent upon the franchise to put the young man in the best position. And if that's the case, like, if they're going to draft, whether it's Mendoza from Indiana, Moore from Oregon, the kid from Oklahoma, there's probably six quarterbacks who are going to be worthy of being drafted high.
But we could have that conversation. Who's to say that they even want one? What if they don't love one?
Yeah.
Like, are they taking it just because they're that high? What if they love, I don't know, a lineman or whatever it may be, a defensive stud, an edge rusher? Like,
yep. I'd rather them trade out rather than reach.
Fair enough.
The last thing to do is reach. And there's plenty of draft talk, but geez, do not reach.
But reach could also be for a quarterback. I wouldn't be doing that, especially in year two.
No.
If you don't love somebody or you don't believe you're ready to bring that player into a successful situation.
I agree. Now, I don't think that the Jets will have the first pick because I think they'll squeeze out a couple of wins. If you want to put me on the spot, what's the Jets' record? They're 0-6. I think the Jets will finish 4-13. And I think one win comes this weekend against Carolina. Okay. If I had to go in a different direction, I'd probably be more inclined to say 3 wins than 5, rather than going the other way to 5. I think 4-13 is a sweet spot that Miami, they got Miami at home. You know about the next couple of games here. But
is there a win total that you think gets them fired?
No, I think that that's very foolish to...
Even if you went winless?
If he goes winless, then I could see Woody firing him. But I think it's got to be deeper than that. I think that's what a short-sighted, quite frankly, dumb owner would do, really. Be too reactionary, a little petulant. If there's enough evidence that they're playing hard and they're making progress, even if it's not reflective in the wins, I think that's the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, just for example, if they played every game the way that they played week one and lost every game, I know you'd sign up for that in a second. Yeah. Obviously, you want the wins, but at least you would be encouraged. Now, the caveat would be, well, if they played like that in week one every game, they'd win some games.
Exactly. They would have beat the Dolphins. They would have won yesterday.
Right, exactly. But the key is for them to get things cleaned up and play a consistent brand of football. Is this breaking news right there? Adam Schefter. Titans fired head coach Brian Callahan.
There you go. We were literally just
talking about this during the break.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about how Callahan, we saw that Callahan was ripping Cam Ward.
That's probably a good way to get out.
Now, what year was this for Callahan? This was year number two?
For Callahan.
See, that's a dysfunctional organization. They hire a head coach to do a job.
Yep.
Then they draft a young quarterback the year after, as opposed to trying to have it together with this. And now they fire him immediately. I know he was He was holding Cam Ward accountable for it.
Yeah.
Cam Ward said, we asked, or whatever it was a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
The head coach is saying, yeah, well, basically we are, in his own words, including Cam Ward. And now he's out. Now they get to bring in another head coach.
Who might not like Cam Ward. And here we go. The carousel of stupidity continues.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.